It's time to get brutally honest.
You are the straw that stirs the drink in the family. Is that weird or
that's
not terrible. Weird?
That's not good, eh?
You're not talking about like Crosby with the offense Penguins.
She stopped like mid and she goes, what?
I mean, have an idea.
Have an idea.
She Eckers-lead me.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
I gotta come clean. I'm looking forward to this next hour. I'm also looking forward to going home. I pulled a rookie move. When I travel for work, I prefer to be in a suit. I think you know that. We've gone away a couple times together. I packed some different dress shirts and suits to go to Ottawa. Forgot them in my bedroom. So this suit and this shirt, they've been putting in some time.
So that's what you wore on the panel last night?
And the day before.
You know what? To be honest with you, when I was watching your panel hit, I thought you were wearing the same suit that you had been wearing the day before.
Because
you came in, it's a new suit, right? And
you asked,
you were like, what do you think of the suit? I'm like, it's a nice looking suit.
It's a hell of a suit. I've been eyeballing it here all afternoon.
It's not bad, right?
No, it's a hell of a suit.
Yeah. It's a really nice suit. But I was thinking unless he got like, he's going Superman on us here and he's got multiple suits that are the exact same.
This suit needs the dry cleaners bad. Bad. Anyway.
That's bull riding uniform right there.
Mix in a shower? You mixed in a couple of showers.
Dude, I'm like you. I got a shower. I got a...
I've got a full routine. I shower before I go to the gym.
That is stupid.
That's the truth.
Do you understand that hockey players, I don't think... This is just one of those stupid facts. When I had apartments and condos and homes, I think I might have showered in them 5 times total.
Yeah, because you're at the rink showering.
That's right.
In the hotel room showering all the time.
You wake up, like, I didn't shower when I went to the rink for morning skate or practice. I just went to the rink. You shower there. Like, I didn't shower before I went to bed. Mm-hmm. I never showered at home. See, ever.
I don't get the showering before bed routine either. That's my wife's move. Like, she's like, oh, I'm not going to have time in the morning, so I'm going to shower the night before. I'm like, what does that do for you?
Like, you just get gross in bed anyway. Like,
you get gross in bed. You wake up. Your face is crusty anyway. You're kind of out of it. But women are totally different than men like that. Women can get up and bomb and just get going. Like, I'd like to. We should.
There's the statement of the day here.
Mark, women are different than men.
Yes.
What a loser.
It's a truthful comment.
We need this. Like, it needs to be a clip.
Well, not that we didn't know that. It's an obvious statement,
yeah,
clearly.
Know, but
when I'm talking about a shower routine in the morning, like, I feel like studies have been done here. I might be talking completely out of school, and I could get in trouble for this. But I find that studies have been done that women happily go 3-4 days without showering. Like, without not even thinking twice about it. Not every woman, clearly.
Where's
I'm not
Steph?
Painting everyone with the same
Steph
brush.
Needs to weigh in on this.
I don't know. I think I picked Steph, up on
something
with
Steph. Steph, what's your shower routine? Is it once a day?
Do you go 3 or 4 Steph, days without a
she
shower?
She doesn't even listen
yeah,
to the
she's
show.
Cutting clips. She's not paying
she's
attention.
She's a loser.
So she's out of it anyway. So
we need to hear.
Don't worry about it. We'll get to her later. She's
okay.
Got bigger and better things
going. Oh, really?
Going.
Okay.
I think she's concerned about Noodles. He had surgery today.
Dude, by the way, women don't go 3 days without showering.
Okay. Send us tweets, at HayesTSN, text us 1050-50, email
shower,
us live at TSN1050.ca.
Shower routine.
As an adult, how long have you gone? How many days have you gone without a shower?
When you're not camping.
Yeah, when you're not camping. When you're in a routine of going to work.
Dude, even with I'm camping, I'm jumping in the lake with soap.
But that doesn't count. Take camping out of it. We're talking Monday to Friday. You've got a 9-to-5 gig. How many days have you gone as an adult without showering? I'd like to hear from some people. Bob McKenzie will join us in about 15 minutes as we try to move along here. Obviously, the big news of the day is Kevin Pillar, and he's been suspended 2 games by the Blue Jays, so he won't be in the lineup tonight. I am quite curious to find out how this game plays out. I think the two pitchers clearly are the focal point going into this game. Because if the Braves decide we need retribution, not because of what Pillar had to say, as much as that is the story today, and it's the story throughout baseball, what he had to say. He used a word that he shouldn't use. He's going to pay a price for it. It's probably going to carry him, you know, follow him around for a long, long time.
I think you documented it perfectly, though, Brian. On the list of importance for the Atlanta Braves, that's number three on the docket right now.
Freddie Freeman getting hit and getting hurt is number one.
Bat flip's two.
Bat flip is two. Kevin Pillar and his reaction and his comment, yeah. Three. Like, that's just the truth. I don't think
it's almost like they'd be saying in the locker room, that's for Kevin Pillar to deal with, not us.
Exactly.
The other stuff we are going to take care of and we are going to handle.
Exactly. Because I think if players were to be truthful, if they were caught in honest moments, probably every team in the league would be able to say, we have a guy on our team who's used that word over the past 6 months, who has said it to an opponent. It comes up. It's not right. I think it's a lot better today than it was 20, 30 years ago, clearly, where it might have been used on a daily basis. Things are changing significantly. It's moving in a much, much better direction, more progressive direction. But I think if the players were to police themselves, they'd be like, who am I to say anything? I've done this. I've done that. It happens. It was emotional. It was stupid. It was wrong. Pillar is going to pay a price for it. But from a Braves perspective, they're thinking more. You got Freeman. He's out for 10 weeks. And Pillar and Bautista bat flips us after we're the team that's been getting hit for the past three games. We're the team that lost our best player. And you're going to try to bat flip in our house? I think the Braves are going to be looking for retribution tonight. And I think then it's on the Blue Jays to decide, do we keep amping it up here? Do we accept the chaos? Do we actually seek out the chaos and throw back? Or do we let it go and say, we get it. We understand why you're upset. Bean them. Let's move on with the game. And quite frankly, I don't know how they're going to react.
Buster Olney weighed in. He said he fully expects retribution.
The Braves more than likely will do that.
So different from...
Where's Jerry's percentages? Are we going to throw in a percentage here on this?
I'm not going to go 100%
no.
Because the league probably
sent down
a word. I'm going to
throw in a Jerry for you, Brian, at zero.
You don't think anything's going to happen?
No.
Cooler heads will prevail.
I just think you've talked about situations where you're the general manager, you're the coach, you're the skip. You tell the guys, like, the league is here. You can't do this tonight. And I always found it fascinating where, and it's so different now because we talk about what's going to happen to this guy. The tough guys that I played with, there would be an incident, and they had this something inside them where it was like this different code where they were like, I'm going to let this sleep for 3 months. And when it's a cold, snowy night in February and we're losing 5-0, then I'm going to cause some serious problems.
I remember a story about Dave Semenko, I guess somebody on another team.
Like, obviously. It would never be the next game. It was like they forgot about it for, like, temporarily for 4 or 5 months. And then it was like, remember that thing you did? Now you're going to pay for it.
Well, some tough guy wanted to fight Dave Semenko, and guy was egging him on, he was going on and trying to get all that, you don't want to fight me, oh, you old guy, and everything. And finally, right in front of the bench, the guy was John Adam, and Semenko turned around and said, listen, because here's how it works. I'll fight you on my time, not on your time. And when that time comes, I'll let you know. And he turned around and took the face off. Imagine, and I don't know when it happened or what, but can you imagine that guy sitting there going, when's this coming?
Well, I guess these guys nowadays, they always say, will you give me one? Will you give me one? Yeah. Like George, there's that video of George the Rock where he's like, yeah, I'll give you one. I would always just say nope, but when I was not in the mood, I'd be like, you're getting one now. You're not asking for one.
Right. Well, I liked what you said earlier. The Blue Jays should try to instigate something.
That was Jeff.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if the Braves
don't do
it. I
love that idea. Like, if you really believe and you know, players talk. I mean, I'm sure there's guys on the Toronto Blue Jays. They're talking to R.A. Dickey, and maybe R.A. Dickey's like, you guys better be ready for this. Because it's coming tonight.
That's a good point.
Well, luckily for the Braves, R.A. Dickey isn't on the mound tonight. Because imagine he hummed a knuckleball in and it hit somebody. Yeah,
somebody might catch it with their hand.
Bautista catches it, just rolls it back.
Throws it in the crowd.
Says, give me another crack at it. Try to throw a fastball.
But if I knew it was coming, I'd be like, you know what? If it's coming, I'll start it.
Well, you know what also will be interesting is I'm presuming it's Bautista. I obviously don't know that, but I think Atlanta could sell it both ways. One, he's their best player. Two, he bat flipped us. And three, our fans are probably going to like that, even though they won't consider the fan reaction. But what if Bautista decides, I'm charging the mound here?
He forget what Stroman does. He goes out like he did what he did with Odor.
He's like, sometimes they'll pick, if it's the best player for their team, they'll pick the other team's best player. Maybe that's Stroman tonight. I don't know if that's against the code because it's the pitcher up to bat, but You got to think he's their best player in that lineup.
That would be something. They get through to the third inning or whatever, second, third inning. Stroman steps up and just gets popped. That's a guy who I could see charging the mound, too. I could see Stroman being like, really?
He wouldn't be the only one charging the mound. Well, there would be 50 guys on the mound. There.
That would be interesting, too, to see how quickly the bullpens clear out.
Oh.
Like, if there's any smack talk, the bullpen doors will open and the guys will start charging in. And then once, you know, I believe at some point tonight, the benches will clear. That doesn't mean bombs will be thrown, but I think something will happen where the intensity will get up there and the teams will think, I better get out there just in case.
So he's got zero. I'm going 65%.
I'll go a little higher than you, just to grease you.
That's okay.
70%.
Okay.
70%. So we'll see. And Kevin Pillar again suspended two games and spoke to the media today. He sent out a tweet around 2:30, 3 o'clock, and I'm going to take it at face value. I think he's contrite. I think he understands the situation. I think he understands that he shouldn't have done it, and he's going to have to pay a price, and a two-game suspension, I think, is just. I think that's enough. I don't need it to be more to prove a point. And we'll see where he decides to take this from here. I think now it's on him to decide. If he wants to reach out to the LGBT community, go for it. If he wants to give back to a group or a charity or donate money or his time, go for it. That's his decision from here on out.
I did speak to somebody, Brian, in that community, and I just wanted my friend's thoughts on that, and his response was very simple. He said, I hope it was a slip-up, and that's not what his thoughts are. You know, he said, actions have consequences. He knows better. I just hope it wasn't a careless action where he actually feels that way about that community.
Mm-hmm.
And the first part is dead on. I mean, your actions have consequences, and he's going to pay for that.
Well, the interesting thing with Andrew Shaw, just reading through his suspension, which happened last year right in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
is they had him have to partake in sensitivity training, which means that somebody had decided that maybe Andrew Shaw, you know, needed to be more aware mm-hmm. of how these comments can impact. So, like you said, where does this go with Kevin Pillar? But that was what, you know, was announced from the Blackhawks when Andrew Shaw was suspended for a game.
Well, and that's interesting, too. Maybe the Jays are the ones that decide, you know, this is in your best interest.
Right.
We're thinking about yourself, your own image, and our image. You represent us here. The Jays are not happy. They can't be happy with this kind of storm that Pillar has brought to their front door.
No, not at all.
Not at all. And he needs to know better, and hopefully this is a lesson to him, his teammates, and players throughout pro sports that this isn't acceptable anymore. But
I wonder, Brian, if you ever big picture get to a point where, because if people think that this is the worst thing that's ever been said on a playing field, like,
not
sorry,
even close.
Line of scrimmage, scrums in hockey,
threats, death, like, I will kill you. And no one believes that actually means they're going to kill them, right? And I think it may be a similar situation here where he's using a word that, let's be honest, let's not be naive, he's used before. Everyone has come across words that they've used that they don't want to admit and that they wouldn't use publicly, you know, in a place of business, but at some point in their life they've used it. But I don't think you can jump to a conclusion that this means Kevin Pillar hates gay people or has a serious beef against them, but it's on him to prove that that is the case. And that's why this story isn't over, right? Well, because if in a couple of days something leaks anonymously, actually this guy's got a backstory, well, then you have to address it and then you deal with it appropriately at that time. But all you can do at this point is deal with the facts. He said what he said. He admitted to it. Now he's been suspended, and we'll see where he takes it. We'll see where the team takes it. Masai Ujiri joined us in the previous hour. There was one clip that stood out to me that I think leaves the door open to a variety of options for him. Because he didn't say definitively, I'm going to bring back Lowry. He said, if it gets to that point where we decide that's in our best interest. Now, in the past, he has said, yes, we're going to do it. But I think that four-game sweep, I think what happened with Lowry post-All-Star break may have changed his mind a little bit. And we were talking about the difficulties of overcoming the Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. These two teams are juggernauts. No one can come close. And the idea of trying to get above and beyond that and what he'll do with his team in order to get there. And here's what Masai said.
It's easy to keep it like this, in my opinion. You know, like to be second, third, fourth in the East every year. You know, like just continue being competitive. You know, like I don't know that that's that hard for any. Doesn't have to be me. Any GM can do that. Anybody can do that. How do you take it to that next level? Is what your first question was. Is and is what we're racking our heads now.
It's easy to be second, third, fourth, and consider that a success for a long time. They've done that the past couple of years. And it would be easy to bring back Lowry, try to bring back Ibaka and P.J. Tucker, and guess what? You'll be in the exact same position. So by him saying that, my interpretation is maybe he's realizing that he can't bring back the same characters to have the exact same result.
Well, you can bring back a different cast of characters and get the same result. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, and I know what Masai was trying to say is that we got to get out of our comfort zone, and we can't just be content with being second, third, or fourth. But the other thing that he talked about too that struck a chord with me was he said you can't be afraid to try things. Not that it'll work or that there's a guarantee that it won't fail, but you got to be willing to try different things. And I think that's where he's at right now. He's got when you get swept like this, it's kind of it really gets your attention. You go, okay, I thought maybe we're a little bit closer than this, and maybe we're not. So what do we have to consider, you know, going forward with our group and with our team? And you know, he also made a mention about when he brought in the players that he thought maybe a benefit of a longer time together might have produced different results. Now, would have it produced a victory over Cleveland? I don't think he was prepared to say that, but I think that there was a lot in there with Masai.
Craig, would you ever like pick the brains of your colleagues? Like if you lost a playoff series when you were general manager or didn't, you fell short of different goals, would you ever say? Like, would you ever want to get the outside perspective of your group? Or is because we've talked about this before, where I think a lot of general managers, they fall in love with a team, they fall in love with an idea, but what it's actually producing, it's not even close.
I think you have to get an outside perspective, Jeff, to have a really good perspective on your team. You're going to have your inside knowledge. You're going to have your own ideas internally. But I think it's imperative that you get an outside perspective. And where you go to get that, you know, where you extend it to your competitors, you have to do it. Because if you don't, I think you run the risk of being blinded and not blinded fully, but to a certain extent. And I think the extension of that is there might be a mention of one thing that you didn't even consider because, you know, when like, and maybe there's two things, but you go, oh, geez, I didn't think about that.
See,
and
that's why I think, Craig, I honestly believe, and I've joked around with this guy, like that'll never be an executive in hockey and people make fun of it or whatever, but I think I would be good as a special assistant to the GM because if the GM was ever doing something that I thought was totally ridiculous, I would pull him aside and say, what the hell are you thinking right now? Because sometimes somebody needs that, where it's like, what the hell are you doing?
Well, I'll tell you, Craig Ramsey.
Do you not think I'd be a good assistant?
Yeah. I think you'd be very honest.
But you know what, Jeff? I'll tell you a story real quick. I'll try to zip through this real quick.
No
Bob
comment.
Gainey was our general manager. He had stepped down as coach. So he'd taken a little bit of time off as Ken Hitchcock took over. And Craig Ramsey was working with us. And Craig Ramsey, to me, is just phenomenal. But we were having what do we got to do to make our team better? And we're looking, we need a third line center. Anyway, Craig Ramsey said, he goes, I think Mike Ricci would be a good third line center. And Bob Gainey goes, I don't think so. I don't think he's very good. And so they got into a really, really heated debate. So this is in March. So then, you know, we decided we're going to go out and watch all these potential free agents, trade targets, and everything.
Would you come up with Carbono?
In May, we came back to our meeting. And you know how Bob started the meeting? He said, I want to say something right now. Craig Ramsey's exactly right. Mike Ricci would be a really good third-line center. It starts with the manager not having to be right himself, but being right for the franchise and being open-minded, too. So it also starts with the manager.
Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider, will join us. He was in Ottawa last night as well. We'll look back on that game. The Sens just smoking Pittsburgh. And game four tonight, Anaheim versus Nashville. And we got a lot of people tweeting in, texting in. A few women tweeting in about their shower routine, but the majority of it is guys griping about how their wives or girlfriends don't shower. So basically, it's turned into like a therapeutic hour for guys. Like guys are texting in, be like, I hate to admit it, but my wife will go 3-4 days without a shower.
Dude, that is so offside, man.
I'm telling you,
shower guys.
You're preaching to the choir. Anyway, Bob McKenzie next. My girlfriend's move is shower once every 5 days because it's healthier for her hair.
Hashtag wouldn't be my girlfriend anymore.
I'm telling you, man, a lot of guys are texting in, and I think this is becoming therapeutic for them. They're like, thank you for allowing me to text in and tweet in my beef, the fact that my wife or girlfriend doesn't shower every day.
Dude, you got to have a couple showers a day.
Listen, I can only say to the guys out there, ask yourself what kind of choices you've made.
Yeah. Although, who are we kidding?
Barn door needs a wipe down.
What do we bring to the table? We bring Bob McKenzie to the table on this show.
Yep.
The Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance. And Bob is still in Ottawa doing panel hits. Was that a difficult going away watching the O-Dog jump on the bird today, Bob?
Yeah, very sad. Absolutely. Yeah. Forlornly walking out of the hotel this morning, getting his cab to the airport.
So, Bob, you're sitting there, I'm assuming, watching as Jeff is about to get onto the mechanical bull. What were some of the first thoughts that went through your head?
Actually, I was inside.
Okay.
Him and James were out there, so I didn't actually see it until they came back, and then I saw the photograph, and all I could think of was probably what O was thinking of was as he was getting on there, and I was looking at it, I was thinking to myself, I couldn't do that because the ass would rip out of my pants, and that would not be a good scene.
Well, it wouldn't have been a good scene for the rest of the night. Just everything, going to dinner, doing the hits. I don't want Norm no pants. Like, I need my pants intact.
And Duthie would have been all over that, too. The video, the pic.
Oh, yeah. It goes from a really neat photo with some fun with the captions, as James was asking for them on Instagram, to... ripping the arse out of your pants.
I was telling these guys, I feel like I'm Chris Farley when I'm with James. He's always like, do this, it'll be funny. Do that, it'll be funny.
And like, you do it.
Yeah, I know, but that's what happens. He's like, hey, if you did this, this would be funny. I'm like, all right, I'll do it.
Yeah, just be careful, though, because Chris Farley's no longer with us.
I get it.
Yeah, it's probably a good lesson, actually. Maybe tell David Spade to take a lap every once in a while. Yeah. With Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider. Where do you stand on this goaltending situation in Pittsburgh? Are you Team Murray or Team Fleury for game four?
Yeah, probably Team Fleury. I've kind of thought about it for a little bit. Now, I won't be surprised if Sullivan decides to go Team Murray. I'm not reading anything into the fact that Fleury had the net to himself today. I think it could go either way. You could make a case for either, but I'm of the belief that sometimes loyalty's got, and I understand you want to win. And whatever Sullivan and his coaching staff decide, it's because they think it gives them the best chance to win. But you know what? I mean, Fleury's the reason that they're even in the series right now. And I didn't think he was, like, terrible horse bleep, you know, all on him last night. They got steamrolled right from the opening minute of the hockey game, and they didn't have an answer for anything that happened. They were absolutely shell-shocked, and Fleury was part of that, and he wasn't, you know, A-plus by any stretch like he has been for most of the playoffs. But of the four goals, only two of them, I think, are even suspect, and they're not even, like, the blatantly suspect ones where you're letting one in from center or it's a clean shot that just beats you. So I think he's a beloved guy on his team, and I think if they put him back in, I think he'll want to rally. I think his teammates will want to rally around him, much like they did as a group after, pretty bad efforts in Game 5 and Game 6 against the Caps, and then they came up with a gem in Game 7. So that's my rationale for why I'd stick with Fleury. Now, having said that, really short leash. Obviously, if they get another goal 50 seconds in or a few minutes in, you might want to rethink that.
Bob, do you believe in the kind of distraction type of theory where if it was Murray, it would be all about the starting goaltender and not about Crosby and Malkin and not about the depleted decor and not about anything else except the goaltender? Do you buy into that, or is that just garbage?
I think those narratives are all mostly for us in the media. And then, hey, listen, we need them. That's what, we got to fill these panels. They don't fill themselves. So we gotta talk about this stuff, and we gotta this theory and that theory and all that kind of stuff. But you would know better than me. I mean, you played in the league, and Craig, you've been at ground level with the team as a general manager. And I just think, especially today, these guys are also process driven. They're all Bill Belichick in a manner of speaking. They all do your job. If everybody does their job, if everybody, I don't know. I don't want to say they're impervious to pressure or that they don't think about the things we think about, but I think the reason they're professional hockey players and they're as good at their jobs as they are is because they know what they have to do to win, and they either execute and get it done or they don't execute and don't get it done. But if they don't, it's not because they were distracted by this storyline or that storyline. That stuff, I think, is mostly for us in the play box and in the sandbox of the media.
I will say this, Bob, it could generate some type of excitement in some players. When I look back about playing the Detroit Red Wings in the finals, I thought to myself, if we had played Kevin Weeks as opposed to Artur Zerbe, they flip-flopped both series, and we went with Zerbe in the finals, and I'm thinking Kevin Weeks was more of that dynamic goaltender where he could have stole us a couple games, and ultimately Detroit was better, but it might just excite some guys and bring back some memories of last year going on that run with Matt Murray, just feeling a little bit comfortable and getting that vibe back that guy's back in the net again. It might create some excitement in guys.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. Although in that case, if I was a player, I'd have a more recent memory and I'd be like, wow, let's get Fleury back in here, because those games, and we had no business winning in the series against Washington. The only reason we're even in this round is because of Flower. So, and they love this guy. Like, he's probably the most popular player on the team.
Yeah,
and is such a big part of everything they do. And I gotta think that if they're gonna go to the wall for anybody, they're gonna go to the wall for this guy.
Now, Bob, I know that Mike Sullivan after the game last night was talking about they played half the year without Chris Letang, but this is a different animal in the conference final here with playing a team that's well oiled. Like, do they not go hand in hand? You know, the struggles of the offense, you know, with the absence of some really key defensemen.
No question about it. I talked a little bit about that on the SportsCenter panel hits we did today. All your offense starts with your defense. It all starts with how you get the puck out of your end. And I talked to somebody who watched the Washington-Pittsburgh series, and they said what they noticed about the Pittsburgh defense was how often they either just get the puck and they just flip it out to the neutral zone, sort of Hail Mary it out there, just get it out of our end, or they just slap it hard around the rim, it up the boards. And that's not the way the Pittsburgh Penguins historically have come out of their own end. They usually come out tape to tape, give it to Sid or give it to Gino or give it to Phil and let these guys build up a head of steam through the neutral zone, and away we go. Now, the Sens obviously do a good job of taking away some of that neutral zone. And, this whole thing of how boring the Sens are and how passive they are, they're not passive at all. I find them a very aggressive team, especially last night they were. But even in the two sleepers in Game 1 and Game 2, I always see examples of two guys in deep forechecking. I always see one guy going hard at the puck and the puck carrier or the guy who's got it for a 50-50 puck on the wall, and then I see another guy come right in behind him, and the third guy's up pretty high, but I see them below the goal line all the time, and I see their defensemen pinching like hell all the time. I can't count how many times the puck goes up the wall to a Pittsburgh winger, and there's Cody Ceci or Dion Phaneuf or Eric Carlson or Mark Methot, and they're right down to the hash marks physically engaged. It's just that the other guys support them so well, and they're backtracking like their hair's on fire. And most of the time that Pittsburgh does get the puck through the neutral zone, when they cross the blue line, there's already four guys back. So, I'm not completely sold on this concept that Ottawa's doing nothing but laying back in some sort of new age trap that is so passive. I think it's an aggressive game they play, and I think they were really aggressive last night, and they were really physical, and I just didn't think the Penguins were mentally engaged at all, or physically engaged, but that comes from the mental part of it. And that it does make me wonder, based on how we saw them play for the whole series against Washington, even though they won it, if maybe they're just, maybe they're just down. The energy reservoir is down. They won the cup last year. Everybody talks about the hangover. Well, maybe the hangover's kicking in now. I don't know.
I would say a Kessel Phaneuf fight first shift. That gets it started, man. Wouldn't you say that that would really kickstart the bench?
You heard that me.
We were in hysterics watching them last night because I'm sure you can see it on television, but boy, oh boy, there's so many times where their paths cross and Phil's given, like, he's either hacking. He's so mad at Dion right now on the ice during play.
I stood he's up either, for you.
He's either whacking him with his stick or he's threatening to whack. There was a couple of fake, I don't know if it was picked up last night, but I saw Phil skate by Dion and it was like he gave him the fake, like, I'm going to whack you with my stick and didn't. So, that, you know, it's on and it's great. And credit for enough, he's playing some of the best hockey I've seen him play since the early days with Daryl in Calgary. He just seems to really have a nice role that he's playing. It's a nicely defined role within the structure of the team. He's not trying to do too much. He's not having to play too many minutes. I really think he stepped up in a big way in this series.
I think Phil's got to be careful because read on
that
situation.
I said last night, he is very close to a five-minute major and get out of here because he's going to go John Scott.
I think you're probably right about that, but my read on it was Phil is looking at Dion like he's the big brother that won't do anything. Like, he can take liberties on him because Dion's not going to do anything because of their history. And I think at some point Dion's going to say, okay, and he's going to pop him right in the head, and Phil's not going to know what to do. Because at some point Dion's got to react.
What I noticed last night, and you saw it late in the game when they were mixing it up, is that when Phil goes to engage with Dion, Kunitz is there, like, instantaneously. And as soon as Phil and Dion start to get engaged after the whistle, it suddenly fills out and Kunitz is in. And that probably, you know, that probably signals to Dion to back off a little bit too because, you know, that's not a trade he wants to make.
I want to play a clip here. The Marlies were ousted last night, and they had a pretty good run. I mean, a pretty good run. I think they probably met expectations. But Travis Dermott is a kid we've talked a lot about, second-round pick in the Marner draft. And the expectation is he'll have a real shot at cracking the Maple Leafs lineup come September. And he's very critical of himself postgame. I mean, I read it on Twitter, then I heard it, and I was surprised by the honesty. Let's listen to what Dermott had to say about his own game postgame last night.
I think just all around my game has to be better. I think this series showed that maybe I'm not ready for the next step if I keep playing like this. So hopefully I can work forward on where I had some mistakes this series and then see where that takes me.
That is quite the criticism of his own game. I mean,
it's a ridiculous comment.
You don't like it? Like, what does that say about him and his confidence and where his head's at? What did you make of that, Bob?
Yeah, you know what? It's a rare moment of candor, honesty we don't usually get from players. And, you know, kind of thinking out loud, maybe. But he's, you know what? He's a first-year pro. He's still a veritable kid. And obviously in the aftermath of the game, very disappointed at the way the season ended. And obviously personally disappointed with how he played. And I think you know, I'm sure if they haven't spoken to him already during exit interviews, they will, and they'll explain to him, hey, you had a great year, and it didn't quite finish the way we wanted it to, didn't finish the way you wanted it to, but you just got to put that stuff behind you. And I still think you'll see him as a guy who's got a chance to challenge next year for a spot on the blue line, but obviously he's got to earn that and do so in training camp.
Players are usually their harshest critic, right? But generally that happens internally or behind the scenes in front of the mics. I mean, it's a learning process. He's still a kid. I'm not saying it means anything about his career or where he's going to go. But,
absolutely.
You know, it's...
Yeah, it's highly unusual because I just was flipping through Twitter at the end of our game last night and saw that. And I was looking at it. I went, oh, wow, that's unusual for a kid to say that. I'm sure it'll be part of his learning experience, and probably in the future he won't think out loud. Or if he does, that's fine too, as long as he uses it in a positive fashion. But as I said, he's still a real good prospect, and he's an interesting guy because he's kind of a hybrid, and sure, he's not a big guy, and yet he's not a small guy. So he's not 6 feet tall, but he's really thick, and he's a real good skater, and he's got a real good shot from the point, and he can do things with the puck offensively, but he's also an abrasive guy that's hard to play against. And most of the time, anytime I've seen him play junior hockey, and from what I read of this Syracuse series, pretty much everybody on the other team wants to take a run at him by the time the series is over, by the time the game's over, because he's an irritating guy to play against.
Great stuff, Bob. Enjoy it out there. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks, fellas. Take it easy.
Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider, was brought to you by Finance and Monthly Payment Plans for Big Dreams and Everyday Budgets. What's your Jerry's percentage, Craig, on Dermott cracking the Leafs lineup next year?
Well, I don't know, but I think it's like any young player. I think he's got to come in and have, again, you hear Mike Babcock, have a good summer, but come in and show that you can help this team. And he to Bob's point, he's a really good skater. He's a competitor, and, you know, he draws the ire of the opponents. And but it's I'm telling you, it's hard to be a defenseman in this league at 21 years of age. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. So, I mean, what he's going to have to show, I mean, he can skate. He's competitive. What he's going to have to show is this: can he manage the game with his abilities? Like, you know, does he? I think defensemen have to learn. They don't only have to learn what to do. I think it's just as important, if not more important, they got to learn what they can't do anymore. Mm-hmm. Because a guy like Travis Dermott, who could skate, one of the things great skaters can do in junior, they can make up for their mistakes. At the National Hockey League level, you're watching the other team celebrate, and you're going to the bench, and they're showing you video. So what you got to do is understand, I can't put myself in that position because I can't get myself out of it at the National League level. So I think that's, he's no different than Andrew Nielsen or Valiev.
Yep.
You know, they're all learning what not to do, because in the NHL, the opponent is going to eat you alive when you get into those spots that you can't make up for that you used to in junior.
How do you balance those guys, Craig, in the minors, where it's like, I have zero patience, and part of that is because of my hockey background. I try to explain that to people in real life, and they don't really understand it because just everything's non-negotiable. It's like, go out there and do this and do it. Just do it. Like that was everything in hockey. Just do this. And there's no coming back to saying, well, I tried, but I couldn't really do it, because then you don't get to play. Well, how do you balance the fact that these guys learning, growing, as like, don't you want a guy that just says, I got it, like I want to play?
Well, those are usually the guys that get there quicker, right?
Well, no kidding, yeah.
Like they do, and other guys, you know, they're in this mode of, and that's why we use the word translate. Does it translate to the NHL? Well, yeah, he skates and he's competitive, but can he think at that level? Can he get to that next level? I'm a big believer for defensemen, even offensive defensemen, if they're trying to learn, make them kill penalties. Because that's one of the areas where you have to be really patient.
And it'll test every element of your game.
The competitive areas.
Skill,
right?
Getting the puck out, getting away from danger.
Under pressure.
Yeah. But isn't this comment also about him having to realize he's got to move on from a bad shift or a bad game?
Like, yeah, that's...
My understanding, I didn't see it, but my understanding is he fumbled the puck a couple of times. It cost his team in the third, and then clearly he was still emotional about it.
Right, when I became established in the league, I would see young guys, it was like they'd summer skates, dangle, 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 goal, practice, scrimmage, dangle, dangle, goal, exhibition game against New Jersey, Scott Stevens on the ice, dump, change. I'd be like, no, that's what you are. Some guys just can't. The different elements, like when Scott Stevens is on or Eric Lindros or these different guys, they will make people, that's why they're so effective. They make people change. They're not, you're not out there. And you either do it or you can't.
Well, and I think that's a really good point, Jeff. You either can or you don't, and you're trying to help them do more than can't. But the reason guys fail, I mean, you draft good players from the different leagues, and the reason they don't make it is because they couldn't figure it out.
Right.
They couldn't.
They're all talented.
Couldn't get it. Yeah.
Yep. Time now quickly for our best bets, brought to you by ProLine. I'm on Anaheim because they're paying $230 tonight. I'll take Boston and the Dodgers at home. Throw down 20 and you can score $102. Find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. Recap what has been a busy afternoon.
Yep.
Tee up a big night and get to the three stars. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Don't forget to set your PVR on TSN 2. If you can't watch the show live, you can watch it later. Find everything podcasted online. TSN1050.ca. Check us out on iTunes. Little Spoon Man coming in from Soundgarden. I think this is fitting as Chris Cornell committed suicide late last night, early this morning. I love Soundgarden. I mean, Super Unknown is one of my top two or three albums of all time.
You do like that old school kind of...
That's right in my wheelhouse, man. Like, it's interesting when guys like Prince passed away, David Bowie passed away. I've heard all their music forever, but I was never a fan necessarily of theirs. But now, like, Soundgarden was kind of right in my wheelhouse. So when it's like one of your favorite musicians, it really can hit home. Like, it's sad, man. It's sad. It's really sad. But they were a great band. Audioslave was a great band. So I think Chris Cornell maybe will come up in the three stars.
Well, you think about Kurt Cobain too, that Seattle, you know, grunge,
yep,
you know, scene and everything. You know, here's another. There's another guy from out that area.
Exactly.
You know,
the Seattle bands, a lot of them.
Yep.
I mean, Eddie Vedder was trending today because he's still alive.
Yeah.
You know, like, to put that into perspective. Anyway, Jays Braves tonight. I'm embrace the chaos. We'll see what happens.
I agree.
You know, if it happens, so be it. Let's hope nobody gets hurt. But if there's a little bit of beef to make it interesting, these are two teams that have been terrible this year. Let's see what happens.
I always said you can find out a lot about your teammates when there's kind of that anxiety before a game like this. It's like,
yeah, you know it.
tension, right? The tension. It's like something's going to happen. Are you going to stand up? Are you going to hit somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you afraid that if you hit that guy,
something's going to happen?
Or am I going to start up? You can tell who's in, who's all in, or what everybody's about in games like this.
Same thing, I guess, Ducks Preds tonight. Much more important game, clearly, but.
Same type of element, though, Brian. It's like kind of a must-win. You always notice the guys that show up in these games.
Anaheim, I think, needs.
If Anaheim doesn't win, they're not winning three straight against Nashville.
Not a chance.
I don't see it happening. I think you're probably right. All right, we'll leave it one star, Chris Cornell. Leave it there.
Well done.
Good stuff today. Craig, thanks for popping in the past couple of days, buddy. Shout out to Noodles, too. We'll include Noodles in the stars. We got to do that. Because Noodles had surgery today.
Lieutenant
I think he's
Dan.
All good. He's not coming in tomorrow.
He's Lieutenant Dan tomorrow.
He might Dan it. Maybe we
Imagine
can expect
he
that.
Imagine he Danned it tomorrow.
I would love him. I would think that would be brilliant.
Let's do it.
Do it, Noodles. We're out of here. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.